This podcast is brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or download the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store. Enjoy.
To another episode of Tech Plus with myself, Kane, and Eon, where we take a look at the latest tech news coming at you right here from sunny South Africa. Eon, how are you doing today?
Hello, Kane. I'm good. How are you, man?
Feels good having the sun out. What a weekend. Good day, yes, to be outside.
Nice long weekend. Thank you to all the ladies for making it possible.
Yes.
Women's Day that we had on Friday yesterday. Thank you so much. And yeah, the weather is quite nice. Getting a bit of a spring vibe, to you know.
I think we're getting a hint of what's in store for us in summer this season. And I'm quite excited. Yeah. I really like it. I like the temperature. I feel like we're out of that winter, worst part of winter, which is like,
yeah,
we've got the dark mornings. Oh, dark, I've had evenings, enough. Hey. Cold.
No, it's time to move on now.
It's very nice now. Speaking of, did you know that South Africa now has an 89 billion rand wind power kind of energy market? South Africa actually has a pretty impressive 89 billion rand worth of investments in our green energy, creating over 23,000 jobs and powering over 3 million homes annually. This is according to the South African Wind Energy Association, or SAWEA, the country's only wind energy association. It said Africa's manufacturing output is expected to grow by more than 6% annually until at least 2025, and South Africa is at the forefront of the transformation in Africa, with its wind industry growing rapidly. And wind technology accounted for 4.9% of the electricity produced in the first quarter of 2024. Pretty impressive. Remember when we had the worst of load shedding, we would actually talk about how much power is actually added onto our grid from renewables like sun and wind, and it wasn't a lot. In 2013, actually, it was 257 megawatts, and now in 2023, it was 3,442 megawatts. So that's more than, you know, 10x the energy capacity from renewables between 2013 and 2023. 3.4 gigawatts of power. That's even more than we looked at when we were talking about in 2022. We were at about, yeah, a gigawatt. So to see 3 gigawatts or 3,400 megawatts of wind energy is really, really cool. And if you've ever gone to PE, you know there's plenty wind to to go around
in. It's the windy city, yeah.
It is. It, yo, absolutely is.
But listen,
is.
Now that you mentioned load shedding, we're now on 137 days of no load shedding. Can you possibly believe this?
I know.
But we can basically say we pulled through winter without load shedding.
That's it. And winter of all seasons, like, surely winter's supposed to be the harder one.
Exactly. So like we said last week, it doesn't make sense. The last time we had load shedding was on the 26th of March, 2024.
I still see people popping up everywhere talking about how little units they're getting for their purchases.
Mm.
I think I purchased 1,000 rand electricity on the first day of the month, and I think I got 300 units.
That sounds about right.
I thought it would be worse. I've seen some people reporting on worse, which is scary.
Yeah, because all those charges that go off as well. But I mean, no, I was just thinking, now we've got the Eskom Sapush app on our phones, and we're not using it. I see they're now using it to distribute weather warnings, damaging waves and damaging winds. But that's what they're using it for now.
Oh,
and,
really?
To report local outages. But otherwise, nobody's using the app at the moment. That's the problem with having an app like that. It was so successful when load shedding was at its peak. But now, what do you do with the app now?
Yeah, what do you
see? Yeah, that's the problem.
It could be an outage reporting thing, but as quick as its popularity declined, its popularity will return if load shedding does. That's for sure. That's where everyone's going if it does.
It's actually a problematic, kind of business model because it's so unpredictable. I mean, how do you calculate your profitability if you don't know when load shedding is coming back?
Absolutely.
And you have an app and you've got server costs to pay every month, but nobody's using the app at the moment because we haven't had load shedding for over 130 days. You see, that's a bit of a problem.
That app's not going to be... I wonder if you could see how many people have it installed right now. I wonder if you'd keep it on your app, but just not go... I mean, keep it on your phone, but just not go into it.
I'm leaving it on my phone. Do you have it on your phone?
I still have it on my phone, but I haven't gone into it.
It's in the background and nothing is popping up. It's very quiet.
Speaking of which, the hammer the penny has finally dropped for Temu and Shein. Ooh. I see South African Revenue Service has announced interim tax changes that will impact e-commerce players like Shein and Temu from the 1st of September 2024. Apparently, it will also now charge VAT, value-added tax, on top of the flat 20% duty these importers currently pay. So apparently, I didn't know this, but the loophole that Temu and Shein, I don't know if they were abusing the loophole or it just happened to be something that they were using. However, if you import something into South Africa that has a value of lower than 500 Rand, there was no VAT. It was just a flat 20% duty that you would have to pay.
Yeah.
So what was happening was they were somehow bringing in, or sending people items of clothing, but because there was no VAT included, they were undercutting the existing retail market.
Mm.
And it was mostly for apparel and clothing from Shein, but Temu also played a role in some, smaller goods stuff as well. So now apparently there will be an implementation of potentially 45% VAT plus duties for Temu and Shein. So you can expect Temu and Shein prices to potentially increase, but there's definitely been some action taken. Apparently these are temporary changes and we'll see some more longer term permanent solutions coming at the end of September. But that's Temu and Shein finally. After all that, finally we hear something.
Yeah, and listen, this week also a big story in the news, and we just mentioned it before the show started, is the two American astronauts who went on a test mission to the International Space Station, the ISS. That was supposed to be 8 days. They've been stuck now for over 60 days, and apparently, according to BBC News, they could be stuck until next year.
They're going to be there so long that when they return...
The Christmas decorations.
Christmas in space, a holiday edition.
This is terrible. Imagine you're just signing up for 8 days. Okay, now I'll go to space for 8 days. That's fine. I'm sure I can manage. Now it's gone over 60 days and you're missing the people on Earth.
They're going to be in space so long that by the time they come back to Earth, they're going to be considered a tourist.
That's a good one. But they feel that it's not safe for them to come back yet, and they want to be confident when they send them back. But now they say Elon Musk could be called as well to help get them back.
Yeah, I think that's why it's not like this urgent thing, because they know if push comes to shove, probably just ask SpaceX to lend
a helping
hand. I
think SpaceX will be saving the day.
Throw a couple billion at it,
Yeah, oh my goodness.
That is crazy. You know, what also is crazy is 1 gigabyte per second internet speed. Do you think you would ever find yourself seeking out 1 gigabyte per second internet? To put it in perspective, most households have probably about a 50 meg download, 25 meg upload. Some households with fast internet might have 100 megs download, 50 megs upload. But 1,000 megs download or 1 gigabyte per second download, do you think you would need this?
Nah, not for me. I don't game, you see. And you?
Well, even with gaming, that's the thing. I mean, 1 gigabyte per second is kind of like, it's like taking a nuke to, a BB gun fight. It's just, you don't need that much power.
You're right. That's a good analogy, yeah.
But apparently, South African homeowners looking to benefit from the highest available fiber to the home speeds have numerous 1 gigabyte per second options. Not many that I've seen.
In our area.
I've seen 500 down.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen 1 gigabyte per second.
No.
But apparently, theoretically, a gigabyte per second package or internet can download up to 125 megabytes per second. What to put that in perspective, your normal flash drive that you would normally use probably transfers at anywhere from 12 to 30 megabytes a second. So 1 gigabyte per second internet connection is going to technically be anywhere up to 5 times faster than most flash drives. So you're going to be getting internet, you're going to be getting data off of the internet up to 5 times faster off of the internet than you could transferring it with a USB drive connected to your computer. That's how fast it is. Also, if you have the speed and you have the right equipment for it, it will take between 30 to 40 minutes to download a game called Ark Survival Evolved, which is known as the largest PC game by file size, which is a quarter of a terabyte or 250 gigabytes. So you can download 250 gigabytes with a 1 gigabyte per second internet connection in 30 to 40 minutes.
Yo.
So that is insanely fast. Additionally, if you have a movie, an average movie size of about 1.5 gigs, it'll take you about 12 seconds to download that movie. And this is a good way.
Fun.
I think this is a good way to illustrate why I think a gigabyte per second doesn't really make a lot of sense. Because if you're going to download a movie, most of the time when you're streaming content off of Netflix, you're not downloading the movie all at once and then watching it. You're watching it and slowly but surely downloading the movie.
Without knowing.
Without knowing, right?
Yeah.
You're just watching the movie.
It's happening in the background.
And in the background, slowly but surely, that movie's being downloaded so that you can watch it. So if your movie's 1 hour, it's probably going to have downloaded that whole movie over like 55 minutes.
Mm.
You know, that's the amount of time. So if you can download a whole movie in 12 seconds... but you're going to watch the movie you're going to download the movie as you watch it, then it doesn't make sense to have that fast of an internet connection. Additionally, if you can download a movie in 12 seconds with a gigabyte per second internet connection, then if you only had a 500 megabyte per second internet connection, you would download the same movie in 24 seconds. So would you mind waiting an extra, 12 seconds for your movie to download? Probably, you'd probably be fine with that. That doesn't
matter. Yeah, it's quick.
You know, even if it was a fourth of the speed, you know, instead of waiting 12 seconds, you'd wait just under a minute.
Yeah.
So does it make sense to make your internet 4 times faster than it needs to be? So if you're downloading something in 1 minute, do you really want to be able to download it in 20 seconds? That's the difference with that high. So I don't even know what the use case is of someone who needs quite a gigabyte per second internet, unless you're a store or you're like a B&B or you're like a hotel and you've got lots of guests and lots of people that connect all at once. I don't think it would be necessary. But what blew my mind was in December 2015 was the first time a company in South Africa offered 1 gigabyte per second internet. 2015. I didn't know you could get a gig internet a second in 2015.
No way.
And that was Vumatel with their XDSL Uncapped, which cost a 4,700 rand a month when it launched in December 2015. Nowadays, the prices are a lot cheaper. OpenServe, I believe, and that's the main service provider in Eisner, is still at only 500 megabytes per second, so we might not see a gigabyte for a while. But it looks like the price for a gigabyte per second ranges from anywhere from 1,000 rand a month to 1,500 rand a month on average, which I think is a really good price compared to 5,000 rand a month a few years ago. So that was very, very interesting. What's your internet speed, Jan?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I'm not sure. I think it's 50 down.
Oh, really, eh?
50 down, 25 up. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Should be. Well, that's what I'm paying for anyway.
Sometimes
what is yours?
I have a 500 down and 250 up.
Goodness gracious. You have like a zero after what I have.
So I read a really interesting article from MyBroadband where one of the guys from MyBroadband in Cape Town raced Uber Eats and Mr. D to KFC and back to see if he ordered from Mr. D and if he ordered from KFC and if he went there himself,
They really go the extra mile.
What was Foster?
Yeah, these articles, hey?
These guys took to the streets, bro, to make sure that this happened. So, long story short, he raced, he made an order with Mr. D, which is Takealot's delivery service provider, and he made an order with Uber Eats, which is obviously Uber's food delivery service provider, and then he got in his car and he drove there. So he says his house was about 2.4 kilometers from the KFC branch, and the results came in. Apparently, overall delivery time for Mr. D was about 30 minutes. Uber Eats took 25 minutes, and he managed to beat them both. And he was able to go there, get the food, and come back in a quicker period of time, but only by 2 minutes.
I know, then it's so worth waiting.
It's kind of worth it, man.
It's worth it.
2 minutes.
If you're very hungry.
But you see, the thing is, I have a theory. I feel like they might have got lucky and it took 2 minutes. But if it takes 12-minute difference and your food is chilling for 12 minutes, it can depreciate the quality of the...
And if you're hangry, then it's going to be a problem, eh?
Yeah, then you're going to get to decide whether you want your hamburger with a dry bun or a wet bun. That's terrible. Have you ever had that?
No, yeah, but it's all steamy.
Where like they've put the sauce on the burger, but the bun just by the time you get it, it's just absorbed all the moisture.
Oh,
from
no,
the,
yeah. You know, it's just that's not cool,
terrible.
Yeah,
absolutely terrible. Speaking of which, is it time for a music break?
It is. Let's go for some music. Welcome back to Tech Plus on this Saturday with myself, Jan, and also Kane, talking about all the biggest tech news in the world forward this week. Kane, what have you got for us next?
So here's something very interesting. Remember when we had Travis Scott do a virtual concert in Fortnite? Do you remember that? He released like one of his latest songs, or he did like a virtual concert.
When was that now?
Where it was like... It was middle of pandemic.
Oh, okay.
So it was like 2 years ago.
It's probably somewhere in the memory bank, but I forgot about it.
Yeah, so Travis Scott decided to do he was one of the first ever people to do a virtual concert. A concert that, and it was very interesting in of itself, because to access this concert, you didn't go to a website or tune into like a VR stadium. It was just inside of Fortnite, the computer game. You know, so people play Fortnite every day, and all of a sudden, inside of Fortnite, here's Travis Scott.
That's pretty cool.
You know, like a 20-story tall version of Travis Scott singing, and everyone's like running around on the floor using their mouse and keyboard to run around. It was a very interesting experience, something I actually joined in on just to see what it was like, and it was very interesting. But apparently, Disney and Fortnite are making a big event announcement inside of Fortnite again. Disney Horizons Live from D3, which is an island in Fortnite, which you can find the island code for if you are someone that plays Fortnite. But on the 10th of August at 11:30 p.m. ET, you can catch the show, and they'll obviously be making some sort of announcement. And inside of the trailer media and stuff, you can actually see a Wolverine kind of some like Wolverine art. So maybe it's going to be something to do with Deadpool Wolverine. Maybe it's going to be some sort of new game mode or new feature coming out. But pretty big to see Disney doing a reveal, something that's actually like, hey, come find out what we're about to do for the first time, but do it inside of Fortnite. Very interesting. Not something we've seen before, and I'm sure anyone who plays it will be interested to queue in there and see what that looks like. The next thing as well is we have a mega... sized, this is the craziest thing ever. In New York, they're bringing a new statue in, something that's going to sit in the New York High Line plinth in October. And it's basically a T-Rex sized pigeon, a 16 foot tall pigeon statue created by artist Ivan Argote. And they're going to be putting that in New York. And he wanted the piece to invoke a sense of familiarity with those who often observe pigeons in the city. And they're putting literally a giant pigeon statue in New York City. First was the Statue of Liberty, and now it's the statue of pigeon. You know? Wow.
It's a win for the pigeons.
I thought that was quite crazy. Can you imagine trying to build that thing?
No.
And you're the one in charge of making sure this thing looks realistic. Man, that would be crazy. That would be insane. The next thing we're taking a look at, and this is something that I'm actually very glad is being addressed, EVs, electric vehicles. We all know the biggest problem with EVs that anyone would probably say is you've got to sit and wait for your car to charge at a station if it has an electric charger. You know, the whole stop quickly and fill up with 40 liters of fuel and just drive away after 3 minutes isn't really a reality that exists for electric car drivers.
What is the longest it will take to charge, or what's the minimum you can get away with?
I've seen some advertise, you know, 50% charge in 20 minutes. Stuff like that.
So that's basically what you're doing anyway if you're stopping at a petrol station, you're just going for a quick meal at Wimpy or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been driving 200, 300 kilometers and you're going to pit stop at a petrol station, grab a bite to eat, you know, stretch your legs, go
then
to the
your
bathroom,
car can charge in that time.
That's 20 minutes easy.
That's fine, you know? Yeah.
So you've got
even 50%. An hour is enough, yeah.
But then there's even some that are... And we'll get to some of this news now, but they're even, that's why I think Elon Musk tried to put gaming inside of his cars. Why would you want to be able to play computer games inside of your car while waiting an hour and a half for your car to charge? You might want to do some stuff.
You know?
But what I always wondered was, you know, I could buy a Kia electric, I could buy a Rivian, which is a new electric car manufacturer, which we'll speak about in a second. They're draining money fast. We've got... Mini also has an electric, and you might have, you know, you might have a Tesla. Now, when you pull up to Knysna and we have our little charging station, what are the odds that that little charging plug is going to fit into your car?
Oh my word, yeah, that's another story. You know? If it's not already occupied, and how do you know it's going
to
fit?
And if you do have an adapter that can take one port to another port,
yeah,
what if it can only take Kia ports to Tesla ports? What if,
that's terrible.
Do you have like five? When I went to Europe, I went and asked one of the reception people, I'm like, do you have a plug port? And they gave me this thing that was like seven plugs plugged into each other. Oh. Each time it converted into a different plug. So I was thinking, man, are these electric drivers going to have like seven modular adaptors that could change the Kia to a Toyota, change the Toyota to a Tesla, change the Tesla to a Rivian.
Now and you eventually you'll get there. My Tesla's not going with the Toyota. Let's try it the other way around.
So a new EV plug has been manufactured now. ChargePoint's new OmniPort can deploy the correct plug at charging stations to fit your car no matter what it is.
Oh, thank goodness.
So I don't think it's any mechanically advanced thing. I think what happens is you say what your car is, and then before you pull the theoretical hose, what would be a petrol hose but now is an electric power cable, when you pull that out, it already has the right attachment on it. It automatically puts the attachment on for the car you say you're charging.
That's very cool.
So it's not quite as universal, like it's not like a skeleton key of car chargers, but it does automatically put the right attachment on for you before you go plug it in. Again, like what happens if the attachment is very similar, you put the wrong attachment in? You're dealing with like thousands of
It's a lot of extra planning now for when you're going on a trip, because otherwise you could be stranded there, you know.
Or have to
wait for somebody to bring a port or buy one locally. I don't know.
I saw, it was the funniest thing, that one of the guys that has an electric vehicle, especially it was like 2 years ago, so every time he would go out and drive his electric vehicle, you'd take his petrol generator in the back. So that if he ran, if he got into a situation, he could convert 10 liters to electricity.
Oh my word, what even is the point?
It's called a manual hybrid. It's when you buy an electric, but you still insist it should be a hybrid.
Yeah.
You take your own generator. That is so funny. Then in some other news, especially to some computer owners out there that have bought a computer in the most recent, you know, six to 12 months, Intel's 13th gen and 14th gen processors have recently been experiencing a lot of problems. And as a result, Intel has extended its warranty on 24 different 13th gen and 14th gen desktop processors to have a 2-year extension on that warranty, which basically means that you can send it back and get a new one. What's happening is, for some reason, when they manufactured these particular processors and paired it with the manufacturer's motherboard, for some reason there were some faults in play where the wrong voltage would be sent to the processor, whether it was a laptop or whether it was a gaming computer or whether it was a rendering computer or a professional computer, whatever it is, it didn't matter. Some of those devices, some of those machines were randomly, you know, getting corrupted, boot problems. Oops. They were having processor related issues, and what was happening was just there was too much power going into the processor, causing degradation and damage that can't be reversed with software. And as such, they've extended this warranty. But I always find these processes quite tricky, because it's like buying a car, and you know, maybe you go buy a BMW and it's this new X5 model. And BMW makes an announcement to say anyone that uses, you know, the air vent coupler from the radiator to the engine, you know, you're getting a 2-year warranty boost, go get it replaced. Most people don't know, you know, they don't even know when they're buying the car, they don't even know they're getting that piece inside of the car. Same as if you're buying a laptop or you're buying a desktop computer, you might not be aware that there's a separate little piece of tech inside that is, you know, in this case with Intel, is subject to be replaced, to be returned if you're ever having issues, which means the only way that people are going to get, you know, help is if they take it to a repair center and the repair center is, you know, on top of it and knows what's going on. So having these problems with processes like that and having a big manufacturing issue does create a very difficult process for the manufacturers, Intel, to communicate with the customers which bought the device from a distributor. They would have bought it from Rectron supply, a distributor like Evitech or Takealot. You're not buying it from Intel. So it is very tricky, and all it would really mean is, let's say if you bought it from Takealot and the thing is faulty, your new laptop keeps crashing, things are not working properly, randomly apps are not working properly, it's just you've bought an expensive machine and things aren't just working right, you'll know who you are if you're listening. Submit it for a return through Takealot or whatever, and those repair people will look at it and either void that item. It is quite tricky, but you know, if you're buying a new laptop, you want it to work. You don't sit with a thing not working properly.
And you don't want to have that thing with you on a Monday morning when you're trying to get going.
It's always when you need it the most.
Listen, with me, there won't be time to send it for return. It will go right out the window from the fourth floor.
From personal computer to personal frisbee.
Absolutely.
Man, that is funny. Next up, we have Trek. That made an electric bike bell. Now, I didn't know this was a thing, but apparently for some cyclists, you can actually get in this case, it's a proper piece of tech. It's an electric bike bell, which you attach to your bicycle. And depending on how you push the bell, it's obviously electric. It has up to like 24 different types of sounds that it can make. Obviously you can curate it, so you can do like a gentle warning kind of thing, or you can be like a more urgent warning. Maybe you're crossing the street and someone's kind of, you know, on a phone twindling towards you. You can just like gently warn them, like, hey, don't do that. Or maybe someone's reversing pretty quickly and they're about to smack into you, and you can more aggressively remind them that you're behind their car. But I think the cool thing about this is normally the bikes just have the bell. Have you ever said ding, 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 ding?
Yeah.
Sounds like someone's telling you food's ding, ready, ding, you know?
Yep.
And that's not really the most effective noise. You know, yeah, when you're driving through the streets and you hear ding, 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 you don't really think, you know, you might think, oh no, a train's coming, but...
Or dinner's ready.
Dinner's down the end too. Is that dinner already? You know? So this one is scientifically, they've actually made sounds to be more audible, to be better to pick them up, but also to tell which direction they're coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
So a gadget like this might actually be very useful, because...
Lifesaver.
You might, it just might be the difference between whatever you're trying to warn, picking up that you're warning them, like, hey, watch out for me, I'm on a bicycle. Because if a car drives into a guy riding a bicycle, the car definitely wins that fight.
And also a lot of, you know, cyclists have AirPods or whatever you call them in their ears, yes, listening to music or podcasts, hopefully...
Or you're on a bicycle and the person in the car is listening to music, and you just hope that whatever noise you make, I'd record my own audio.
Would yours be?
Imagine making like, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't even drive a little bit right now. Imagine a guy riding his bike with like a speaker just shouting command. Hey, hey, you, don't do that. Don't cross that road.
Or profanities.
So speaking quickly about, remember the Kia Boys? Do you remember that?
Help me.
So the Kia Boys is not a boy band or anything. It's not
was a boy band. Oh, sorry.
One Direction and the Kia Boys. No. The Kia Boys were a bunch of people on TikTok that made videos on how to bypass the security measures on Kia and Hyundais.
Oh, okay. Now I'm too old for that.
And then there was basically a whole bunch of Kia and Hyundai car jackings.
Oh, dear.
Because people would go on TikTok and be like, this is exactly how you can use a USB-C cable to break into a Kia. And then go, oh, what an interesting video. Let me try it. That's how we got.
Were those boys arrested?
Oh, well, they inspired many people to go Kia shopping. And they had a genuine problem on their hands.
Oh, my word.
And the crazy thing is, Kia and a Hyundai, they don't have an immobilizer in it. They sold these vehicles without electronic immobilizers, which was a pretty common thing for the other competitors. But I imagine at the time, without TikTok and some of social media, car manufacturers would have done the math and been like, how often are our cars getting hijacked? If we're putting 20 million units of this electronic into cars, but there's only 10,000 hijackings a year, we're spending 1.98 million units too many, you know, if they're putting 10 million units around or 20 million units. So this probably was a thing where they were like, let's save costs. They'd not put the electronic immobilizers in. And then 5 years later, here come the Kia Boys. And they're like, hey guys, this is how you can use a USB-C to hijack a car without any guns needed. And people went out and they just... Some people did it for fun. Some people made videos where they would go like to, like they would get dropped off with an Uber, go grocery shopping, come out, steal a Kia and just drive it home. You know, they would like do crazy stuff like that. And Kia has now begun doing over-the-air software-based updates, sending out some electronics, doing some things. But they had to agree to a $200 million settlement with the owners of those cars, which is quite a settlement.
Sure.
You know, when you were thinking about saving that $2 million on electronic immobilizers for all your cars, you really weren't expecting the $200 million fine that you might get from it. But apparently the rate of thefts have reduced by 50% so far, but they're still pretty high.
Do you think it happened here in South Africa as well?
Especially South Africa, because we have some of the oldest cars on the road out of any country. You can find like a 1990 Taz on the road.
I saw a Beetle from the 70s.
You can literally find a Beetle.
From the 70s, eh?
You know, so there's definitely some guys hijack the Kias and they're like, wait, there's no electronics even in here. Where do I plug my USB-C cable in? I just see aircon. That is too funny. So apparently we spoke about some electric cars, Rivian and Lucid. Rivian makes pickups and Lucid also makes like luxury electric vehicles. Apparently they're just throwing money into the fire at this point. They released some of their earning reports for the second quarter. Lucid reported a net loss of $643 million and a slight improvement over the $764 million it lost in the second quarter as well. And Rivian said it lost a staggering $1.46 billion. But lo and behold, they're still alive. Why? Is because they have some great friends, very wealthy investors that are just more than happy to inject capital in. So really what's happened here is we've seen now that the survival of electric-only vehicle manufacturers isn't necessarily based just on the product alone, but on how willing the capital injectors are to continually push money into this thing until it starts seeing some balanced payments. And we saw with Takealot. Takealot started making profit last year, I think, for the first time.
And how long were they going?
Like before? 8 years. They bought Kalahari.net.
Wow. Oh, I remember Kalahari.
So they bought that.
They
were the acquirers of that. So they existed even when Kalahari.net was here.
Sure.
So that's a long time to not make profit.
Mm.
Apparently, also the Great Barrier Reef is facing some of its biggest threats at the moment. Some of the highest temperatures ever recorded in the last 400 years.
I'm seeing those ice glaciers are also just melting away. In fact, one melted and flooded a whole town.
Really, eh?
Yeah, it was in the news this week.
That is insane.
They're just melting, eh?
That is not good. And as well, Disney's apparently starting to, you know, dip its foot in the water of password sharing crackdown.
For Disney Plus?
Yeah. Do you share any of your Disney Plus logins?
No, I don't have Disney Plus anymore.
Do you use only someone have Netflix? Else's?
No.
No, you just don't watch it.
I only have my own Netflix.
You used Disney to not Plus have Netflix is, either.
I had Disney Plus. Then Disney Plus got boring because it's more older shows, you know, that you probably have as a box set or on your computer anyway. So then I decided, I'd rather just get Netflix. And then Squid Games is coming out, finally.
Are you ready? Are you excited?
When's it? October? No, October, November, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, so we waited, I think it was 3 or 4 years, eh?
Yeah, that was a long time.
Oh, it's going to be good, but it was a long wait. So worth keeping Netflix for. I think Netflix really upped their game a bit. I don't know how you feel.
I think they've definitely...
Recently.
They've definitely got some good movies coming. There was a dry spell of monumental dry spells.
A very long one,
It was, felt like it was really
nothing to watch. That's why I cancelled initially. Yeah. And then that's why I got Disney. But now the tables have turned, my friend.
Exactly. Disney Plus will apparently soon no longer let you share your password with the people outside your household. During an earnings call on Wednesday, Disney CEO Bob Iger said the crackdown will kick off in earnest this September. The timeline for Disney's password sharing crackdown has been a bit of a confusing one so far. In February, Disney announced plans to roll out paid sharing and also begun notifying users about the change. It then launched paid sharing in a few countries in June, but provided no information on when it would reach other places such as the US. But now it seems Disney is pretty serious about the rolling out of paid sharing to more subscribers in September, even though it still hasn't shared details on how much it will cost. Netflix, which rolled out paid sharing last year, charges an extra about 100 rand or about $8 per month to add another person to your account. And they went on to say that we've had no backlash at all to the paid sharing notifications that have gone out and to the work that we've already been doing. That was from CEO Bob Iger of Disney. So there you go. If you share your Disney password, be prepared to add an extra $100 to your monthly payment.
I shared mine, so it wouldn't work anyway nowadays. So it's a good thing I cancelled it.
Everyone should just go onto Facebook and share their Disney logins so that it just becomes like impossibly difficult to crack down on it.
That's a good idea, actually.
Apparently, Donald Trump appeared on a Kick live stream with Aiden Ross. That's not something you see every day. This is a campaign that I see Trump doing. It's actually pretty clever, I think. He's going to all of the more like Gen Z, millennial content sources.
Okay.
And he's getting involved in there and speaking a lot there. So that's very interesting. And next, before we go to the music break, we are taking a look at Intel. We spoke about the long time it would take for a car to charge and what might you do to keep busy while your car is charging if you have an electric vehicle. Well, Intel might have the answer for you. They're bringing their Intel Arc GPU to cars. So after introducing the Arc brand a few years ago, Intel announced in China that cars with the GPUs could arrive as soon as 2025, which is just in a couple of months. While it hasn't specified which cars, a demo showed it running AAA games and a new generation cockpit user interface UI that transforms vehicles into immersive mobile hubs supporting 7 high-definition screens, rendering 3D graphics and 6 in-vehicle cameras and interactive features. That sounds like something out of a future technology. Very interesting. I think it's very clever that they're using, you know, a GPU to create a what they call a new generation cockpit user interface. So what is our current user interface? It's a speedometer and our revs. You know, and our little, you know, all of that kind of instrumentation that you have on a car. Now imagine that powered by high-end graphical compute tech that can tell you, you know, the torque of traction on your wheels, or maybe it can create a heads-up display of where you have to travel, or maybe it can create like an augmented reality for, you know, looking through your car as if it's, you know, you have more vision than you actually have, or you know, any number of the crazy things that one might do with graphical compute. So that's pretty cool. Intel Arc GPUs coming to cars in China, and maybe one day we'll see them here as well.
You know what's a bit strange is, have you seen those cars where they don't have speedometers? It's all digital. It's like little digits that keep running. Like when you go faster, it goes up and up and up and up.
I haven't seen that, no.
That's very strange. It's mostly in the Toyotas, I think.
Really, eh?
Some of the smaller Toyotas. Like, you can see your kilometers, but it's like a little clock with three figures, and then you just see like it goes up. It looks like an alarm clock next to your bed.
Oh wow.
The digits, it goes up 200 100.
I've never seen that.
Very strange. And the figures keep running, like the faster you go up.
And so it actually travels up.
Yeah,
in an upwards direction.
No, like up, like higher numbers.
They cycle higher.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's all in a little box, but it looks very strange.
It's all very digital.
Yeah, the way when you go faster, it increases your kilometers that you drive.
That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's a bit strange, actually. I prefer the old...
I like the needle.
The needle, yeah.
That's much familiar better to me, see. Especially with revs and stuff.
I don't think, also for the petrol heads, I don't think it's very satisfactory looking at that clock thing.
Like a digital...
Like that. No, I think you want to see that needle go over whatever speed it is you're doing.
100%.
Yeah, no. That was a bit strange, actually.
Is it time for a music break?
It is. Let's go for some music. And welcome back to Tech Plus on this Saturday with myself, Jan, and also Kane. What have we got next, Kane?
We had some drama in the ad marketing world. AT&T, which we don't have. That's like
a mobile network.
It's like USA's Vodacom.
Okay.
And T-Mobile, which was a mobile company actually owned by Ryan Reynolds. He had 40% share in T-Mobile. I believe he sold it now, but I might be wrong. AT&T changed it, so it made an ad this year with Ben Stiller, and he's basically playing golf, and he hits the golf ball, and it like goes south, and it lands in a pond, and then he picks the golf ball up and hits it again, and it flies even further somewhere else, and eventually ends up on the top of a mountain, and he ends up making a phone call, and you can see the phone call speaks directly to a satellite. So he's in a remote region, and that's what they're basically advertising. They were like, the future of help is an AT&T satellite call away. So that was their ad. It was Ben Stiller transversing through like a golf course, getting lost and going way into the wilderness, and then making a satellite phone call for help. And that was AT&T's ad saying, the future of help is an AT&T satellite call away. So T-Mobile was like, hell nah, we're not happy with that. We already have a satellite service, but you don't. Meaning, they should be the ones that can advertise and say it is a satellite call away. Whereas with AT&T, they didn't actually have that service running yet. So they had made an argument to say, hey, you guys can't say that. There's no service yet. You're trying to compete with our market, but you don't actually have a product to offer. You just have some waiting list. It doesn't actually exist. So AT&T came back and said, cool, no, we'll adjust the ad, no problem. And all they did was change it from saying the future of help is an AT&T satellite call away to the future of help will be an AT&T satellite call away. That's all they did.
I love it.
After all that trouble. It reminds you of the Red Bull story where someone sued Red Bull for saying it gives you wings and it doesn't. So then instead of saying wings, they just added an extra I to the word wings.
Wings, oh,
so
that's brilliant.
Wings, and it wasn't wings
that's
anymore.
Brilliant.
And that was the end of that.
That's brilliant, yeah. You see, you can still get away with these things. You just have to be creative. Now you're talking about satellite calling. I literally don't know. That's why I'm going to ask you now. And I hope you know. How on earth does Wi-Fi calling work? I've seen this thing on my phone that says enable Wi-Fi calling. through MTN or whatever.
Yeah, that it just treats it just as a it's an over the internet call that is treated as if it's a phone call going directly through your fixed internet connection.
So does that mean it doesn't take your minutes or your airtime then?
Correct. Makes an internet call as if it's the same as a WhatsApp.
It's almost like
call.
A VoIP. Is it almost like VoIP?
Correct.
So why would anybody then use airtime if they can just Wi-Fi call?
Well, that's why Vodacom over the last 10 years, if you had invested in them, wouldn't have netted you much profit, because their business works by monetizing SMSs and connected
voice
time.
You don't need airtime then.
You don't need it. Not many people make normal mobile phone calls anymore, or send SMSs or any of that stuff. So that voice over that service was a precursor to what we now have, is just any easy internet phone calls.
That's why they're not, because we do WhatsApp voice calls anyway, which is free. But this is obviously why they're not really advertising it, because they want you to recharge. So if you have a Wi-Fi network, you can phone for free.
Yeah. Using if the you, network. If it's like catered into the package and the router supports it and all of that. Now, here's something interesting. We were talking about suing and all that sort of stuff. The ad group. Remember a while ago, Elon Musk was actually doing like a conference chat or something like that. And one of the people that advertise on Twitter started like boycotting Twitter, basically calling for advertisers not to advertise on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then Elon Musk actually went out to say, he was quite unhappy about it. He ended up swearing on national television.
Didn't he give them the finger as well?
Yeah,
I remember.
What did he say? He's like, if somebody is going, he said this as a reaction. Like, what do you think about the way that they're doing this? And he said, if somebody is going to try blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money, go F yourself. Go F yourself. Is that clear? I hope it is. That's what he said. TV.
Yes, our boy from Pretoria, eh?
So he finally had enough with these guys that actually did the boycott, and he turned around and sued them recently. He said, okay, no problem. Like, all fun and games aside, like, you've had your chance. Now I'm going to sue you for the loss that you created, because nobody was advertising on Twitter when they were boycotting it. And when Elon Musk bought Twitter, that was its 90% primary revenue driver. So its main revenue driver just went, whoop, gone, no money. And he's just turned around and said, look, you guys are still trying to boycott it. You're still trying to keep advertisers off my platform. I'm just going to sue you.
Just another case for the Musk. I mean, he's got like 1,000 already, so what's another one for him?
And this group of advertisers called the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, GARM, have discontinued activities. So they've basically disbanded their business now. So Elon Musk said, we're gonna sue you. They said, hold on, guys, we're disbanding. We need to have as much money available as possible to fight Elon Musk. And it just goes to show that, it's all fun and games until litigation comes out.
Yeah.
It's easy to boycott these things. It's easy to do these things. But Elon Musk has a track record of literally saying, like, stop, or I'm going to take all your money away by suing you. And he does. And here he's doing it again. So people are like, they've got mixed emotions about it. It is a bit of a obtuse way. But if you've spent $50 billion on a company with a B, and it's not making any money because this group of activists is just boycotting your revenue model.
No, I think
you don't really have a choice.
You would sue too,
You have to. You're gonna or close the business. So between a rock and a hard place, there you have to make a hard decision. Speaking of which, there's another hard decision that was made. Apparently, a Chinese Long March 6A rocket broke up in space and unfortunately created 300 pieces of trackable debris in low Earth orbit, according to U.S. Space Command. The agency has observed no immediate threats as a result of this breakup. So obviously China tried to send a Long March 6A rocket into space. It broke up, and long story short, 300 pieces of debris in low Earth orbit.
Oops.
That I think is, if you built a little airplane made of you know, paper or something like that. Or let's say you took a whole bunch of pickup sticks and you tied them together with Prestick into a plane and threw it, and it landed on the ground. The pickup sticks would just go everywhere. It would just land on the ground and just that would be it. You'd sweep it up and throw it away. But in space, when something breaks up, it breaks up, A, at a very fast speed. Usually, you know, it's at like 20,000, 10,000, 5,000 kilometers an hour spinning around the Earth. And then it breaks up into lots of little pieces. And all those little pieces continue to circle around the Earth. So if you're in a vehicle that's leaving Earth, you could be hit by one of those random pieces of debris.
Sure.
Or another one of the satellites that are in orbit could also be hit by this debris.
So oh dear.
I just find it fascinating that if you try to do something like launch a rocket into space, you could add 300 projectiles moving at 5,000 plus kilometers an hour, just spinning around the Earth until they,
wow,
you know, atomize and re-entering into the atmosphere.
Mm.
But just don't think about that, you know. And imagine all the failed rocket launches. Imagine there's, I think there's something like 150,000 pieces of space debris in orbit. Just
will they all eventually just burn up?
They either fall out of orbit or plunge.
But they won't fall on my house. Is it possible?
No, it isn't impossible. There was
I'm not going to sleep tonight then.
it isn't impossible, but it's very unlikely.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely. Most of the stuff that is lower than optimal orbit will come back into the atmosphere and burn up.
Mm.
Of that, maybe 1% will go through, and then it literally is more likely to hit ocean than it is land.
Yeah.
And if it does hit land, it's more likely to hit open land than your house. So you're actually in pretty good, you're in a pretty good place. The stuff that is in optimal orbit will probably continue to orbit forever. And sure, then the stuff that's not, it's above optimal orbit, then it will kind of just go back into space. It'll, you know, it'll fall out of orbit and go away. Maybe. You know.
Hopefully that doesn't happen to those two astronauts who are stuck in space.
Satellites actually have a phase of their life that is built to either push themselves down and just, you know, completely destroyed re-entering the atmosphere, or to push themselves up and leave Earth's orbit. That's the end of life cycle. It's actually like a pretty important part of the satellite manufacturing process, is actually how do you decommission the satellite once its use has been served. And that's either to push it back into the atmosphere and it'll die, or just push it out of the atmosphere and it'll fly away.
Sure.
And that's managing space junk.
That's very interesting.
And on that note, it brings us to the end.
On that interesting note, it is indeed the end of this week's show. Kane, thank you so much. And you must enjoy what's left of the weekend.
Thank you very much to you too. And thank you so much to all of our listeners for listening in. We'll see you same time, same place next week.
Absolutely. Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
This podcast was brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or through the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store.